I'm Randy Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the King County Sheriff is advocating for higher property taxes, but who's pulling her strings? Plus, a school choice bill is actually getting a hearing in Olympia. I can't believe it. It's a chance to send a message to the state's most powerful union. And former congressional candidate Joe Kent tapped by President Donald Trump to fight terrorism. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. Hello, 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 and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I suppose I'll start the show just by reminding you guys we will not have a Thursday show, so tomorrow will be our last live show of the week. I'm going to be at LibertyCon in Washington, D.C., hanging out with all the weird libertarians. They're an odd group, aren't they? But I'm happy that they thought enough of me, that I'm libertarian enough to be invited to host a panel there about politicians. It's literally called, like, how to tell when a politician is bullshitting you. So I had to swear because it's the name of the panel, Nicole. So I'm excited to be in DC for LibertyCon on Thursday and throughout the weekend. So that's why we will not have a Thursday show. So I'm going to remind you again tomorrow. But just so you know, I want to talk about a story we broke just after the show ended yesterday. I got sent an email from a King County Sheriff's Office employee that was sent out by Sheriff Patty Cole Tindall. And it raises alarm bells for a lot of reasons. But the gist of the email that she sent out to her staff is that she is working closely with lawmakers in Olympia to raise your property taxes. Yes, this is the sheriff, the appointed sheriff of King County, who is sending her employees an email assuring them that she is working closely with lawmakers in Olympia to raise your property taxes. Does that sound weird to you? Yeah, it sounded weird to me, too. I want to read the entirety of her email for you so you have it in context before we discuss, I guess, why she's doing this. It says, as most of you know, we're working on a tighter budget environment. We were given a directive to drastically reduce our spending for the 2026-2027 budget cycle. Final budget adjustments continue to be discussed. All King County agencies supported by the general fund have a similar directive to decrease expenditures. I realize this may sound challenging and at times insurmountable. Please know we are working diligently to minimize the effects of this to employees, and at this time we do not anticipate any reductions in staffing. I will be working with our leadership team to do everything we can to mitigate impacts on the King County Sheriff's Office and the communities we serve. All of that up to this point, just fine. I would expect her to do no less. It says emergency response and calls for service remain our top priority, and we are doing everything we can to help ensure the impact to public safety is as minimal as possible. We are working closely with state legislators on efforts to lift the 1% property tax cap. If successful, this will help increase the general fund, which in turn will help support how we as an agency are funded. As we navigate our way through this, you have my promise to share any updated information as soon as possible. We will get through this together. So there it is, that we are working closely with state legislators on efforts to lift the 1% property tax cap. So as you know, because we've discussed on this show, in fact, this bill is on my list of the top 10 bad bills working their way through Olympia this legislative session. It is House Bill 1334. That is the bill being pushed by Democrats that would allow counties, local jurisdictions, to raise your property taxes by up to 3% at a time without asking voters for approval. That's the key here. So right now, and this goes back to an initiative that was passed by voters in 2001. In 2001, voters in this state decided that they wanted to limit property tax increases that could be passed without voters deciding, without it going to voters, to 1%. So it's a 1% cap. So if you're King County Executive Dow Constantine, you could raise property taxes by up to 1% at a time without having to ask voters for approval. So what Democrats in Olympia want to do is they want to change that from 1% to 3%. So now you could have King County Executive Dow Constantine or some other county, and they could say, all right, we're going to increase your property taxes by 3%, and we don't even have to ask your permission. So they want to change what voters, via initiative, put into place in 2001, because of course they don't care about what voters have to say. They don't care about the initiative process. We've talked a lot about that. We're also going to talk about it more on the show today. So not a surprise that Democrats are doing this. It's been something that jurisdictions like King County have wanted to do for some time. But the fact that the sheriff of King County, who, as you know, went from being an elected position to an appointed position. And we said all along what the problem with that was. One, it's insane that the voters of King County voted away their right to vote for the sheriff. That is just insane. And it shows the amount of disinformation that was being pushed at the time around race and social justice and this lie that voters were sold that, oh, if a politician appoints the sheriff, they'll be much more accountable than if voters vote on the sheriff. Yeah, makes a lot of sense. But this is the exact thing that we were worried about. It's the exact thing we were warned about. Because now you have the sheriff who is personally advocating, working with Democrats to raise your property taxes. And look, I think Patty Cole Tyndall can probably think for herself. I'm not saying that she can't think for herself. But I am questioning who is urging her to work with lawmakers on this and who's actually pulling her strings. Because who is the one politician in the entire state of Washington who has advocated for raising the property tax levy lid more than any other politician? Who is it? It's Patty Cole Tyndall's boss, King County Executive Dow Constantine. Going back several years now, he has warned of, this was back in 2023, October of 2023, Dow Constantine warns of dramatic fiscal situation if cap on property taxes doesn't change. And he was laying out, we covered it on the show at the time, I remember it very well, he was laying out all these dramatic cuts they would have to make to really important things if Olympia did not give him the power to raise your property taxes at a higher rate without asking your permission. And I think that's key here, is if Patty Cole Tyndall, if the sheriff's office really needs money, like they're going to have to fire sheriff's deputies or lay them off, their response to 911 calls is going to hurt. They can ask you for a raise in the property taxes. They just have to put it on the ballot. Nothing about the property tax levy lid in this state precludes them, as you well know, from putting a ballot measure on for you to vote on it. And I'll tell you, in King County, voters are very generous with their tax money. They're very generous when it comes to agreeing to increase property taxes. They do it all the time. So there is nothing that would stop Dow Constantine, Sheriff Patty Cole Tyndall, from going to voters and saying, look, we're in a dramatic fiscal situation because we can't manage our money at all. And it risks, you know, cuts to the sheriff's office or a lack of 911 response. I guarantee the voters of King County would approve it. Guaranteed. But they don't want to have to go through that. They want to, at a whim, on a whim, whenever they want to raise your property taxes by 3%. And they don't want to have to bother asking you. Because they want to be able to do that whenever they have anything that they desire to fund, even if it's not something as important as public safety. And I would point out, you know, at the time in 2023, when Dow Constantine was raising alarm bells, we're in a dire fiscal situation, unless Olympia does something and lets us raise people's property taxes by more than 1% at a time. I couldn't help but notice at the exact same time, there was an article in the Center Square about King County actually putting together to go to voters an increase in property taxes. And what did they want to fund at the time? King County moves on potential $1 billion property tax hike for climate action. It's because that's the shit that Dow Constantine thinks is important. That's the stuff when he says we're in a dramatic fiscal situation, that's the kind of stuff he worries they won't be able to pay for. So he wants to be able to raise your property taxes by 3% per pop to pay for things like climate action. In order to do that, he has now his puppet, the sheriff, an appointed position to be able to go to Olympia and advocate to lawmakers to raise your property taxes so they can fund climate action and all the other nonsense wasted programs that Dow Constantine has pushed during his many, many years in office. And look, as I said, when I think about, and I've never really heard anything bad about Sheriff Tindall in terms of her as a person. So do I know or do I think that Sheriff Tindall might support a raise in property taxes on her own, absent this position? Sure. I mean, that's possible. But when you really think about it, would she in her position, appointed by Dow Constantine, would she oppose something that he supports? Ask yourself that. Dow Constantine has pushed for years to increase property taxes and to have Olympia do that and give him the power to do that without a vote of the people. So do you think that Sheriff Patty Cole Tindall, who now serves at his pleasure, would oppose that idea? Would ever feel empowered to go against her boss? Of course not. Of course not. And that is the issue with having an elected sheriff as opposed to an appointed sheriff. It is not a coincidence that it's the King County sheriff who's painting this dire picture, working behind the scenes with lawmakers to raise your property taxes, and that it's her boss who, more than any other politician in the state, has advocated for just such a policy. So again, we warned about it several years ago when voters made the decision to vote away their right to vote for a sheriff. And now all those warnings have come to fruition. You basically have a sheriff who should be focused on public safety, serving people, and yes, even advocating, God forbid, if you had an elected sheriff who could go to Dow Constantine and say, hey, you're spending all this money on climate action, all this money on DEI, all this money on your failed homelessness response. So you go cut stuff from there before you come to the sheriff's office seeking cuts, before you cut our ability to respond to life or death emergencies. If you had an elected sheriff, they would be empowered to do that. And our old sheriffs would have. They would have told Dow Constantine to go you-know-what himself. But she can never do that, because he could decide, just like that, that she's not the sheriff anymore. And so now she has to do his bidding in Olympia. And his bidding is raising your property taxes. Don't say we didn't warn you. All right, this is some good news out of Olympia. I'm stunned by this. So there is going to be a committee hearing in Olympia on a pro-school choice bill. Usually when Republicans propose something like this, it just goes to die. It's like, hey, we really want school choice, but you're absolutely never going to get a hearing on it. Well, this bill, House Bill 1140, which is it's an interesting program, the way they set this up, but in a nutshell, it's pro-school choice. It's getting a hearing in the House Committee on Education coming up this Thursday. I mean, what a fantastic opportunity for the parents of this state to show lawmakers and to show the Washington Education Association that they want a choice, that their tax dollars are going to fund education, and that if they don't think that the public education system in our state is serving their child, that they can take that money and they can go elsewhere, that they can homeschool their child, that they can send their child to private school. And everything happening with our public education system is just further proof that we need school choice in Washington state. And you guys know that. I mean, everything that's happening, you know, from test scores to enrollment, you know, the whole political and social indoctrination we see too often, it's all, I mean, the perfect case for school choice for parents. But of course, the Washington Education Association does not want that. Because you know how many kids would leave the public school system? Because they want to hold kids hostage, right? Because those kids, they see them, that's money to them. And that's money to the teachers' union. And if you lose a bunch of students, then a bunch of teachers are going to be without work, and the Washington Education Association just can't have that. So they want to hold kids hostage in a failing system. All so they can prop up the WEA. And the WEA owns Democratic politicians, so I'm just shocked that school choice would be given a hearing where people can actually sign up to testify and explain why our public school system sucks so much. I'm really baffled by it. So the bill says HB 1140, an act relating to creating school choice with empowered scholarships using educational savings accounts. says the state is failing to meet the paramount duty of education by providing a system that, as it exists in statute, discriminates based on these protected classes by forcing children into schools based on their zip code. And it goes on to kind of lay out the case for school choice. And it's an interesting program because essentially it says there's sort of these scholarships that families could apply for so they could take that money. They could pay for private school. You know, if they're not a rich family, that's sort of out of reach for a lot of families. Or they could use it to homeschool their kids. Maybe a parent could stay home from the workplace and that could be used to offset the lost income for that parent or whatever it is. So, you know, the argument that you're going to hear on Thursday, and I'll just say, so please sign up and share your position on this bill. Again, House Bill 1140. With the committee. There are a couple ways you can do that. I pushed out on Facebook and X this morning the link where you can click on it. It literally takes 30 seconds and you can do pro or con. I would recommend doing pro, of course, if you're in favor of school choice. And you can just let them know. And then during every committee hearing, when they do public testimony, they read out for the record how many people signed in pro, how many people signed in con. And you already know that the WEA is out there rounding up its little buddies and all its activists and having them do exactly that, but to register con. So parents and people with common sense need to make sure that they're registering as well, because those numbers do matter. You can also register to be able to actually testify at the hearing, either in person or remotely, if you choose to do so. But at the very minimum, take 30 seconds, if you believe in school choice, whether you're a parent or not, and register pro. Again, the link I just pushed out this morning on my Facebook and my X account. So the argument, we already know what the arguments are gonna be for and against, right? So the arguments for is our public school system is failing. It is absolutely failing. Test scores are in the toilet. We spend more money than we've ever spent before for worse outcomes. Enrollment is down. Attendance is down. Attendance is terrible. It's abysmal. And there is no shortage of stories of active political and social indoctrination in the schools. It is not rare anymore in our state. We did an entire documentary about it, Operation Indoctrination. You can watch it from across all our platforms. Have to get that pitch in every time. And we get stories daily. I mean, we just talked about that school down in Vancouver where you had a teacher who was giving students extra credit if they emailed their elected leaders in Olympia and told them to oppose a Republican election integrity bill. So you have all this going on, but parents are held hostage. Because if you don't have the money to go the private school route, if you can't leave the workplace, you don't have the time to be able to homeschool your child, you are stuck with a failing public education system. So that is very clearly the argument for school choice. Now, what is the argument going to be against school choice? Oh, this would defund our public schools. It would leave our public schools in bad shape. And also parents wouldn't be held accountable for the quality of the education that they're gonna provide their child in homeschooling, as if there's any accountability for the teachers for the quality of education that's happening in our public schools. Now, Chris Reichdahl, you know, he's responsible for a lot of this. He's in his third term now as the superintendent of public instruction. And test scores have just plummeted. And of course, as test scores go down, he always makes the argument that, oh, well, test scores aren't the end all be all. But as I had him on the show and asked him, this is like, what, a year and a half ago? Okay, but if test scores were going up, wouldn't you use that as evidence that the schools were doing a good job? And he had to admit, like, yeah, I would. So he wants credit for it if test scores are good, wants to act like test scores aren't a big deal when test scores are bad. But one of the things that you can't argue, and I say this all the time, is that you can't sit here and make the argument to me that if we only had more money in our public education system, that outcomes would be better. Or that if, you know, oh, if you take these kids away, then that's money that's coming out of the pocket of public schools. And if we lose money, then our outcomes are going to be horrible. And why can't you make that argument? Well, you can't make that argument because we are throwing more money than ever before at our public schools. They are better funded than ever before, yet outcomes are worse and worse and worse. Similar with homelessness, for instance, I say this all the time. You can't believe any politician that says the key to solving the homeless crisis is more money, because very clearly, more money has not solved the homeless crisis. In fact, it has been the exact opposite. I am firmly of the belief that the more money you give the government to solve a problem, the worse that problem will get. Because at that point, it's just a grift. It's an industrial complex, and we see it all the time. So Chris Reykdal did an interview on Cairo News Radio, right? And he was asked about this. And it's a very relevant question, right? And he was kind of allowed to give what really is a ridiculous answer that can just be easily disproven. But his quote was, this is from MyNorthwest.com, Reykdal said inflation ate up $1,000 per student over the last 4 years. Because remember, Reykdal's out there asking during a budget crisis for more money to fund education. He continues to say that that's the key, that, oh, I can do better, just give me more money. So this is his response to that. Reykdal said inflation ate up $1,000 per student over the last 4 years. He said, quote, our school districts have $1,000 less in buying power today to pay teachers, to buy supplies, equipment, to run buses, all of that $1,000 less per student than they had 5 years ago. That's the bottom line. So that's his argument is, oh, sure. Yeah. Well, yeah, we're spending more money on education, but inflation, all of that stuff costs more. You know, cost of crayons has gone up so much. So yeah, we're spending more money, but inflation, duh. Yeah, except with one graph, we can decimate that argument. There is, and this is just a, no, Cole, can you send me the, this is a graph from Georgetown University. So it's based on those, remember the test scores that came out nationally? So it puts all of this in one handy graph that can't be disputed because it's just based on facts and figures and numbers. And in this graph, I'll try to explain it as best I can for folks who are going to be listening, not watching today. So the green line is spending. This is specific to Washington State since 2013. Spending has grown 110% per pupil. So over the last roughly 10 years in Washington State. Meanwhile, reading, that's the orange line, is way down. I mean, it's, what do they say it is? Almost 10 percentage points. Math, 15 percentage points down. So you see the trend there, right? So spending way, way, way up. I mean, through the roof, it goes off the chart, literally off the chart. Reading getting worse during that period of time, same 10 years. Math getting worse, okay. But again, he said inflation. So maybe, you know, no, they plotted inflation on this graph too. That's the gray line. And as you see, yeah, inflation up 35%. But that's not 110%. So spending has increased 110% per pupil. While inflation has gone up 35%. So again, that just negates Chris Reykdal's argument. Inflation cannot be and is not the one thing that explains how we can spend more money than ever before and get worse outcomes. Because we are, even factoring in inflation, we are spending far more money per student than we ever have before. Even factoring in inflation. So Chris Reykdal can go out there and he can continue to peddle that lie on the news, but it's simply not true. And that's why parents should have a choice. Parents should not be held hostage by a failing public education system. And that's the thing, it's literally holding them hostage. If you think, Chris Reykdal, teachers union, that you're providing a good education to kids, right? If you believe that, and I bet you if I ask Chris Reykdal today, are you providing a quality education to kids? He would say yes, because how could he say no? He's been the superintendent of public instruction for 9 years. So he would say yes, right? Okay, if that's their answer, yes. And I think the teachers union would have to say yes too, right? Then what would be the harm in giving a parents a choice? Because if what you're providing is so good, then they'll choose you, right? If given two options to make a free choice, this is America after all, would you not choose the better thing? Nicole, if you had a child, and you were given two options for that child's education, and one of them was clearly superior when it came to academic outcomes.
Right.
You'd pick that one, right?
Probably.
I think every parent would.
I think so.
Therein lies the problem. The Washington Education Association, the superintendent of public instruction, know that our public school system as it exists right now is not the superior option. It is not the option that leads to better academic outcomes. It's the option that indoctrinates kids to grow up to be Democrats. But that's about it. And so they know if they give families an option, families will flee from our failing public school system. And the union cannot have that. And if the union cannot have that, then Democratic lawmakers cannot allow that. So do I think that House Bill 1140 will become law? Not a chance in hell. Honestly, not a chance in hell that Democrats would ever pass school choice in the state of Washington. It will not happen. It is not going to happen. But that doesn't mean that we don't seize on this opportunity, this fact that it actually has a hearing in Olympia, to make sure we tell them exactly how we feel about the state of our public school system. And so I hope every parent takes an opportunity to register pro or con. Look, it's a free world. If you don't like it, register con by all means. But takes an opportunity to have their voice heard, because I'll tell you what, this might be the last chance you ever have to tell Democrats in Olympia and have an open forum to let them know how you really feel about the quality of the education that your child is getting in our public schools. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk about more about this attack on parental rights and also the attack on the initiative process. A lot of this coming to a head this week. It's important to know about it. First, I see a lot. There's a new trend on social media. I don't know if you've seen it, Nicole. It's the face gains. People who are like on their fitness journey, health and fitness journey, and they post these face gains. Or it's like a picture.
I haven't seen that one.
And it's like, you know, you can see how much weight you've lost by looking at your face. That's where I lose weight the quickest, too.
Oh, I didn't realize that until the last time that I lost weight. I was like, comparing the two photos.
Ooh. Well, that was because I need to do a face gains post. Because when you look at my before and after on Eastside Weight Loss Clinic, did all my weight go to a double chin? When I gained weight, did all of it go to my face? A lot of it, for sure. But like, that's a good face gains post. Because I lost 40 pounds on the program, a lot of that in 2 months, face gains through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess that's just, I think that's the first place you notice it, when you gain or when you lose.
It is.
Yeah, but for me, and a lot of those posts I see are the people who are taking those, like, designer weight loss drugs, which, look, I know that's all the rage right now, but the reality is a lot of insurance companies don't cover that. It can cost $1,000 plus per month to take those. Eastside Weight Loss Clinic is an investment, certainly up front, but it's not an ongoing monthly fee. And it's also not a drug that's going to have certain side effects that might be really hard to live with. It is literally just a program that teaches you what to eat in the right portions. I mean, it's like the basic tenets of weight loss and having a healthy lifestyle. And I think the thing is, like, a lot of us know, if we were asked, hey, how do you lose weight? Well, you eat healthier, right? Eat healthier, you maybe get more steps in every day, and that's a sure way to lose weight. But we know that, but a lot of us still don't do it. And so for me, Eastside Weight Loss Clinic was helpful because it gives you a plan for 60 days, literally a daily plan for 60 days. The weight comes off so quickly that it really keeps you motivated. Then you can use a lot of what you learn in those 60 days to keep the weight off for life. So schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Okay, parental rights, as you know, is under attack in Olympia, and a lot of that could come to a head tomorrow on the floor of the state Senate. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right. If you're a parent, listen up. If you're not a parent, but you have a brain, listen up. So we talked about how Democrats are trying to erode the parental bill of rights that was signed. It was a voter initiative sent to the legislature. It was signed into law almost unanimously, voted on almost unanimously less than a year ago, March of last year, and Democrats are already trying to unwind it. So there's two bills, they're matching bills, one going through the House, one going through the Senate. Well, I'm told that the Senate version of this bill, Senate Bill 5181, is likely to be voted on the floor already, this early in the session, already likely to be voted on and probably pass in the floor of the Senate tomorrow. So again, the bill is Senate Bill 5181, and it undoes key aspects of the Parental Bill of Rights. And if you remember, if you signed Initiative 2081, one of the key reasons is you know, these secrets that are being kept from parents when your child goes to school. It's almost like the state believes that when you hand your child over to us, now we're the parent and we're not going to tell you anything that happens at school, which is obviously ridiculous. And a lot of it has to do around medical issues, mental health, gender dysphoria. Again, I would refer you to our documentary Operation Indoctrination, where it spells out a lot of what's going on. You know, your kid might go to school and they want to identify as a different gender, and the school will actively keep that secret from you as a parent. They might go there and they need mental health treatment of some kind that the school is helping them with. They will actively keep that from you as a parent. You know, they might want abortion services or something like that. They're going to actively keep that from you as a parent. They really believe that they know better how to deal with these difficult situations in a teenager's life, which throughout human history, when have teenagers not dealt with difficult situations with the help of their parents? Is it always pleasant? No. If you're a child and you do something, maybe you do something dumb, you get knocked up at 15 or something, God forbid. The school thinks that they can help your child through that situation much better than you can as a parent. It's absolutely absurd. So you had a lot of parents across the political spectrum. In fact, more Democrats and self-identified independents signed Initiative 2081 than Republicans. It got about 500,000 signatures, and it went to the legislature, and almost unanimously, they passed it into law. But the reality is, as I've discussed on this show before, they passed it into law because they knew that they could come back this year and undo it. If they had allowed it to go to the ballot, if they had ignored it and said, we're not passing this initiative into law in the legislature, let it go to the ballot, they know that it would have passed at the ballot. And that's why they want to stop that from happening, because it's much more difficult to undo a voter initiative if it passes on the ballot than if the legislature passes it into law. So it was absolutely strategic. So, I mean, good for them. Strategy. I mean, they definitely won on the strategy front. And now they're coming back. They're going to unwind it. They're going to vote on the floor of the Senate. Another opportunity to make sure that you let your elected leaders know how you feel about it. I'll also say this. So this is a bill from Senator Jamie Peterson is the key sponsor of this bill, Senate Bill 5181. And he is the Democratic leader in the state Senate. We have a subscriber who is in his district, is actually a constituent of his. And so she had emailed him directly just to voice her opposition for them eroding the parental bill of rights. The sanctimonious response that she got. So she forwarded us the response that she got from Senator Jamie Peterson. And I want to read that for you. So he wrote back to this subscriber, thanks for your message. Let me first correct one misunderstanding. There was never a public vote on Initiative 2081. It was an initiative to the legislature. As we knew last year when we passed Initiative 2081, there were substantial portions of the initiative that seemed to conflict with or unconstitutionally amend existing legal protections for young people. It was not a surprise that the King County Superior Court enjoined several sections of the initiative shortly after the 2024 session concluded, preventing it from going into effect. The purpose of Senate Bill 5181 is to make modest revisions to the initiative to remove the parts that have been enjoined and harmonize it with existing state law. I encourage you to review the proposed changes. I'm the co-sponsor of the bill, and I strongly support its passage. So there are some mistruths in here. So first of all, let me just point out, he's a lawyer, and he has openly admitted to knowing, and in this, he's openly admitting there to knowing when he says, as we knew when we passed it, there were substantial portions of the initiative that seemed to conflict with existing legal protections or unconstitutionally amend. So you're telling me, as a lawyer, you passed into law something you believe to be unconstitutional? Gee, what kind of lawyer are you? You passed something into law that you're saying you believed to be unconstitutional. That seems like a problem, right? Now, I don't think it's unconstitutional. And neither does a court. He mentions in this email, and I don't know the exact date he sent it back, but he mentions in this email that a King County Superior Court judge stopped several provisions of the Parental Bill of Rights from going into effect. Well, remember, as we reported on the show last week, what happened? A King County Superior Court judge has thrown that lawsuit out and has said that the entirety of 2081 is indeed constitutional. So there is no legal basis now for Senator Jamie Peterson to be of this opinion that aspects of it are unconstitutional, or they unconstitutionally amend existing legal protections for young people, because a King County judge, a judge in the most progressive county in the entire state, has ruled that that is not so, that the Parental Bill of Rights is constitutional, and must be enacted and must be followed in full right now in the state of Washington. So Senator Jamie Peterson's chief argument that he's making in this email publicly and in this email to a constituent is that they have to amend it. They have to amend the Parental Bill of Rights because there's aspects of it that are unconstitutional, that get in the way of legal protections for young people. Well, a judge disagrees. A judge disagrees. So the only reason now left for you to amend the Parental Bill of Rights is because you do not agree with it. That's the only reason, is that you believe that you, Senator Jamie Peterson, can parent a child better than a parent can. That you, Senator Jamie Peterson, believe our public school system can help a child weather difficult periods in their life better than a parent can. And I can tell you definitively that is not the case. It's actually disgusting at this point, this whole trajectory of where this has come to, where you have hundreds of thousands of voters who sign an initiative, bipartisan, send it to the legislature, including Senator Jamie Peterson, passed this on a bipartisan basis. He's saying he passed it as a lawyer, even believing it was unconstitutional. And now a court has decided it's not unconstitutional. So the whole underlying argument they have for changing the Parental Bill of Rights after less than a year, poof, it's gone. It's not relevant anymore. It's constitutional. It should be implemented in full effect. So the only reason, the only way, the only thing that they can do is just go back and amend the law to undo the things that they don't like. Because they want to push their extreme gender ideology on students. They want teachers to be able to keep secrets from parents. They want teachers to be able to politically and socially indoctrinate kids. Those are future Jamie Peterson voters. Can't let go of that. So that's what this is about. So reject any argument. When this goes to a vote on the floor on Wednesday, you'll hear from Republican lawmakers against it. You'll hear from Democratic lawmakers about why we must do this because it has taken away legal protections for students and it's unconstitutional. And I want you to ask your elected leader, if they're a Democrat, why did you vote for it in the first place if you thought it to be unconstitutional? And now that a judge has ruled it's not, what reason do you have for amending it? Because then the only argument they will have left is that they believe that they can parent better than you can. It's the only argument left. And I'd like them to stand on it. If that's what they truly believe, then stand on that argument. Stand up on the floor of the Senate and say, we know better than parents do, and that's why we're eroding the Parental Bill of Rights. Because at least you're being honest. And I'd have a lot more respect for you if you were being honest about it. All right, speaking of, so this whole process, right? So they undermine the initiative process in all these various ways. I mean, they undermined the initiative process the entire time. Let's Go Washington was collecting signatures through lawfare, through bribing voters, through lying on TV, lying in the news, all the ways they could think of to undermine the initiative process. And then, of course, they didn't get their way on Parental Bill of Rights. So now they're undermining the initiative process by eroding it on the floor of the Senate on Wednesday. And also on Friday, so actually today at 1:30, I'll start there. The bill we talked about on the floor, the bill we've talked about on the show before, Senate Bill 5382, is going to have a hearing 1:30 p.m. today. So coming up, if you're watching the live show, coming up in about 50 minutes. If you recall, Senate Bill 5382 is the bill that's just a straight-up attack on the initiative process. It's the bill that would make it almost impossible to gather signatures en masse, like Let's Go Washington did so successfully over the last 2 years. They want to put all these burdensome rules on signature gatherers so that it's nearly impossible for them to collect that number of signatures with the ease that they've been able to collect them. Because Democrats have figured out that Let's Go Washington has this down pat. Let's Go Washington, when it came to the Initiative 2066 to protect natural gas, they gathered more than 500,000 signatures in a month and a week. So we knew that would freak Democrats out. Because that means that it would take a month and a week for, and probably not even that, because they got way more signatures than they needed. So they found out Let's Go Washington has this all figured out in a way where they can challenge via initiative any of our policies in a month. a process that would usually take like 8 months. Let's go Washington has it down. They send out the mailers, then get enough signatures in a month. We knew Democrats would freak out. This bill is the result of Democrats freaking out and realizing they can send anything we do to initiative like that. And so what do? Well, they don't have a majority, or they don't have a supermajority yet, so they can't just do away with the initiative process, which I think they're getting there, right? But what they can do is make it so burdensome that it's almost impossible. And it's scary stuff. It's dystopian. That's Senate Bill 5382. So it has a hearing today at 1:30, and then it's already scheduled to be voted out of committee as early as Friday, because Democrats control the committees, all the Democrats on the committees, unless there's holy hell raised, are going to vote on Friday to advance it out of committee. And then it would go on to be voted on the floor. So all in the same week, they're going to vote tomorrow to erode parental rights, to give a big middle finger to the initiative process and voters who signed on to the Parental Bill of Rights initiative. And then today, they're going to have a public hearing on a bill that will make it nearly impossible to run future initiatives. And they're going to vote it out of committee as early as Friday. What a wonderful week for democracy. What a wonderful week for democracy in Washington state. It's insane stuff. So what I'm going to be doing every day from now on, I'm adding shit to my plate. Sorry, Nicole. What I'm going to be doing every morning is I'm going to be sending out an action alert. It's the simplest way. If we don't get involved in this stuff, if common sense people don't get involved in this stuff, like you can kiss your right to initiative goodbye, you can kiss your parental rights goodbye, all these bills we talk about, they're just going to sail through. Because activists on the left are organized. I give them that. Activists on the left are organized. If they need to show up, they show up. People who are reasonable, who don't live and die by politics, who are just trying to live their life and do the right thing, they don't show up like that. We have to show up. There's no other choice. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a simple action item. It's going to be one bill every morning, a link to be able to register pro or con, email your elected leaders, or even take things further and sign up to testify. Pick your pleasure or poison, however you want to look at it. And it's going to range from, if you want to register pro-con, takes you 30 seconds. If you want to submit written testimony, it might take you 5 to 10 minutes. If you want to register to testify, make a trip to Olympia, by all means, if it's something you're passionate about. But it's the simplest way I can think of to get people involved. One thing, every day, you wake up with your coffee, click, you do it. Can we do that? Is that good enough? Nicole, you can do that? I only have a lot to do in the morning.
That's good.
But so you can look out on social media and the like, and you can find that click. While you're having your coffee, click. And look, if you don't agree with me on these things, it's fine. When I send out those links, you can choose pro or con. So I'm making it easy for everyone. I'm making it easy for the dissent. I'm making it easy for the pro and the con to do what they need to do. So I'm going to do that every morning, at least here for the next month, as these bills are making their way out of committee, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So just insane stuff, insane attack on the initiative process. All right, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team, I mean, Wes has been doing this for a long time. Like, there's real estate agents that come and go, but Wes has weathered the storms in the real estate, in the housing market, and he knows what he's doing, and he really specializes in homes that might need a little extra TLC. He'll come in, say, hey, here's some cosmetic upgrades that I recommend that you take. He can help you pay for them up front. He can manage the projects and really take the stress out of that for you. Our listener, Sue, we talked to her and she sold her home with Wes, and she said she was hesitant at first because she didn't want to sell it like in the winter, which, you know, I think common knowledge tells you that's not the best time to sell your home, but Wes put her at ease.
It's time for me to go home back to Wenatchee. That's where my mom is, and she's getting up there in age, so I need to help her and start thinking about my own retirement. So
did you feel like, I mean, get the sense that Wes like had a plan, knew what he was talking about? I mean, how comfortable did he make you during the process?
Oh, he made me feel very comfortable. He answered all my questions and he responded to them by email or text, whatever I needed. Just kind of an extra helping hand here and there whenever I needed it. He was always there to support me, and his team is just wonderful.
Yeah, and Sue got an offer for over list price like right away. And so she was like, oh my gosh, it almost came so fast. I wasn't ready for it. So Wes knows what he's doing. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It is simply a better way to sell your home. All right, there's a great op-ed. Well, this sentence might never come out of my mouth again, so enjoy it. There is a great op-ed in the Seattle Times that you should read. Did you hear that, Nicole? There's a great op-ed in the Seattle Times that you should read. It was written by our friend Caitlin McKenney. She's a research fellow at Discovery Institute, and she focuses on the issue of housing. And as I'll talk with Caitlin about momentarily, I'm just shocked that they allowed her to publish Common Sense on the pages of the editorial, on the editorial pages of the Seattle Times. The headline is Sensible WAW Tenancy Laws Will Help Housing Stability. So, of course, one of the most asinine policies working its way through Olympia right now is rent control. They call it rent stabilization because I guess that just sounds nicer. No, it's rent control. So on top of all the other bad housing policy, all the other policy, the eviction backlog, not being able to, you know, properly check the background of people you're renting a unit to, all of these other policies, they want to institute rent control on top of that. It would be absolutely disastrous for the state of Washington. But Caitlin McKenney, in this op-ed in the Seattle Times, she takes a really unique perspective on this issue. You know, focusing on this idea of stability. And what does that really mean? Democrats say they want to give these renters stability. But the truth is that everything they have done over the last 5 years especially, has led to more instability for renters. So Caitlin was nice enough to join us today to talk about her piece. Caitlin, welcome back to Undivided.
Thank you for having me, Brandy.
Could it be? Did the Seattle Times publish something that made sense? How did you, did you have to bribe them to publish this or what?
That's a great question. No, oh. But I am honestly a little surprised that they took it and very happy that they did.
Yeah, I mean, me too. And it's a really unique, I think, argument on the rent control front. I mean, there's a ton of arguments against rent control, I think. But this one has to do with sort of the idea that they're pushing this because renters and low-income renters need stability, right? They need some sort of stability. And the argument that you're making here, and you'll explain it much better than I can, is that all of their policies collectively have actually made renting far less stable. So talk about the general thesis of this.
Yeah, exactly. And we refer to it as rent control, but they are referring to it as rent stabilization.
Yes, captured which, language.
Which I think is very connected to this idea that they're trying to co-opt as their own, which is housing stability and what it means to be stable as a renter in Washington. And most of the arguments that we hear and that we make on the critical side, where we're saying we don't think rent control is a good idea, are focused on the economic aspect, on housing supply and the effect of supply on costs and on regulations and freedom within the housing market. And all of that is fantastic and true. But I think that in this article, I was trying to latch on to something that maybe comes across better on the progressive left, which is the more human side of things and this idea of stability. And it's exactly what you just said, which is I've spent the last year listening to housing providers and affordable housing providers specifically in Seattle and the greater Seattle region share how difficult it is to provide, to operate, to develop affordable housing here because of the policies that have been put in place and to the detriment of all of the other tenants and renters in those properties.
Yeah, and you, and I think this is one of the things that stunned me that the Seattle Times took this, because it's sort of this ugly truth that a lot of people don't want to talk about when it comes to what's happening in some of these government subsidized, even low income housing units that really does fit the bill for instability. I mean, what can make you feel more unstable in your home than not feeling safe in your home? Can you talk about some of the policies and just some of the examples you give of, you know, the connection there between the progressive policies and how they've made life really unsafe for some of the renters that they now say that they want to help?
Yeah, well, in the summer last year, the city of Seattle distributed $14 million in one-time emergency funding to stabilize 24 housing providers. And so I did a public records request, and you can read their narratives and why they're asking for funding. And it's shocking. And many of them are on the brink of financial collapse. Many of them are facing $1 million or more in unpaid rent because they cannot get tenants who are not paying out of their properties. In the Seattle Times article, I described some of the things that they describe. I mean, it's people with weapons, it's rapes, it's setting the property on fire, it's operating a meth lab, threatening people at their door, setting up a house, their own house on the rooftop, and they have to change the locks to get them out of the maintenance shed, threatening maintenance people with weapons. I mean, the list goes on and on, and it's a very small group of people that are doing these things, but it costs the good tenants who are just trying to pay rent. And so some of the policies in Seattle that we've put in place, there are a few that restrict who landlord's ability to know who's living in their property, and then there's a handful that restrict their ability to get people out of the property who are a danger to everyone else living there.
Yeah, I mean, some of these stories are horrible. And there's been a lot of murders, too. You know, we've talked about those. You talk about one of them, the murder of Steve Eden, stabbed more than 20 times in his unit. And so, you know, this idea that we need to give these tenants, especially low-income tenants, stability by capping rent increases, while kind of turning a blind eye to how some of their other policies pushed in the interest of protecting tenants have put these in these put them in these conditions of squalor and danger. I mean, do you think that this is because you said, you know, you wanted to sort of appeal more to that sort of empathetic, I'd call it like toxic empathy, progressive side of things. Do you think that this will get across to them, what they have turned these environments into?
I hope so. I hope it won't be ignored. And that's kind of my point, is that how can you say that you're for housing stability and turn a blind eye to the chaos and suffering that's happening in your affordable housing properties? And so if you want to talk about the cost of rent, you have to be talking about the cost to operate housing and affordable housing in this state. And it's so high because of these policies that you've enacted. So I hope that that message gets across, and I hope to have done it in a way that really humanizes, you know, these are our neighbors who are suffering because of a few bad actors that we can't get out.
And from, you know, just you did something really genius, which is sort of look at some of the reviews of these properties and just what people are writing. Like, there's this one that says, if you're going to live there, you know, make sure that you carry a weapon and watch your back. There's another review for an apartment community that says, I'm a 19-year-old girl living on her own. This place is not safe. There's the neighbors yelling and threatening murder and to slit someone's throat. Like, if lawmakers don't care about that environment, then I don't know if there's any hope hope for Washington. Can I just ask you, Caitlin, you, Discovery Institute, and all the folks up there, you've covered the housing and homelessness issue quite a bit and what's happening with the housing crisis in our state. What do you think will happen if we pass rent control statewide?
I think that our housing crisis will get worse, meaning I think it will be less affordable. There may be some short-term benefits, but in the long run, I think, and this is where the economic side and the supply side comes in, it will be devastating for our ability to attract more housing development here. If it's not profitable, if it's high risk, low reward, why do we think that will be able to produce enough housing to bring costs down and make it more affordable for everyone here?
It's just common sense. It's so hard for me to, you know, the arguments are so common sense against it. So I'm really hoping that they see the light. The op-ed is Sensible Law Tenancy Laws Will Help Housing Stability. Caitlin McKenney, we appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Brandy.
We love Caitlin. She's so smart. Again, Caitlin McKenney with Discovery Institute. Read her op-ed in the Seattle Times and only read that op-ed in the Seattle Times and then shut your browser. Does that mean? No. I appreciate the Seattle Times publishing it. And it's just such an interesting point in argument. It's very unique. I mean, there's a million arguments against rent control. It's one of the chief things we're trying to defeat this session because of how bad the implications would be. But this farce that they want housing stability for renters, when they have caused this severe instability for renters. I mean, instability economically, because you're going to have people who divest and the units aren't going to be available. I mean, the worst instability you can face as a renter is not that your rent goes up, it's that your unit is sold out from underneath you and it's no longer available for you and you have to find another place to live. And we're going to see that happening. But also, there's endless stories and examples of the crime-ridden, low-income, you know, rent-stabilized units that are funded with taxpayer funds. Like, how is that stabilization for tenants? It's really insane stuff. So an excellent piece. And we do these weekly segments on housing thanks to our friends at RHA, the Rental Housing Association of Washington. We are basically teaming up with them to try to defeat rent control. That is the goal of this session. RHA has the back of landlords, small to mid-sized landlords. It's really important not to fight this fight alone. Become a member of RHA today if you are a landlord. It's like $260 a year. They're going to be in Olympia fighting for you as they are right now, but they can also help you as an individual landlord navigate some of these difficult situations that you might find yourself in because of some of these misguided policies. So we thank RHAWA.org for sponsoring these weekly segments for us so we can bring these important issues to light. All right, First Mark Insurance. This is the biggest no-brainer. All these other things costing you money. They want to increase your property taxes. On Undivided, we're saving you money. We're even offsetting the cost of your Undivided subscription. Because it is very likely that if you take some time to do the First Mark Challenge today, they're going to be able to save you some money on your insurance. That was the case for me. That's the case for so many other Undivided viewers and listeners who've taken the First Mark Challenge. Spencer says they're saving him $1,600 a year. Chad told us they're saving him $1,200 a year. And the common response I get from folks who finally do the First Mark Challenge is, why did I not do this sooner? It costs no money to take the First Mark Challenge. You just have to set aside a little bit of time, schedule a phone call, talk to them about your insurance, your current insurance, your insurance needs. They go out, they do their thing, they come back to you, and they're either going to tell you, hey, your insurance is great, you know, we can't get you better rates than you have, and then you have the peace of mind knowing that you're not paying more for your insurance than you need to and that you're properly covered, or they're going to tell you, hell, we can get you a better rate with our carriers, or we can get you better insurance and a better rate. I mean, think about that. It's a no-brainer. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part, besides it being free, is they work for you, not the insurance companies. They're always going to be looking out for your best interest. All right. And as Nicole said, if we save you $1,600 a year on your insurance and you do not subscribe to Undivided for $5 a month, you're dead to me. No, I'm just kidding. You're not dead to me, but you know.
Blame that on me.
If I see you on the street, I can't guarantee how I'll respond. Wow, am I threatening people today? Is that
feisty?
Is that what's happening? It's not a real threat. Please don't report me to the police. I'm a nice lady. I would never physically harm you. All right, national news, but kind of local news. You see the Joe Kent news, former congressional candidate Joe Kent, who we've had on the show before while he was running. He might have lost his race for Congress, but he's won Donald Trump's heart. It's too much. So Donald Trump came out.
I think we kind of knew. He was a loyalist, right?
Yeah, so, for sure. Donald Trump came out and said, it is my pleasure to nominate Joe Kent as the director of the National Counterterrorism Center. As a soldier, Green Beret, and CIA officer, Joe has hunted down terrorists and criminals his entire adult life. Above all, Joe knows the terrible cost of terrorism, losing his wonderful wife, Shannon, a great American hero who was killed in the fight against ISIS. Joe continues to honor her legacy by staying in the fight. Joe will help us keep America safe by eradicating all terrorism from the jihadists around the world to the cartels in our backyard. Congratulations, Joe. Let's give a little congratulations to Joe. I think that's very exciting for him. And I encourage you to go back and watch the interview I did with Joe as a congressional candidate back in October. If you're on Patreon, you can just click on Election 2024 interviews. It'll filter it for you there. You can find it on Locals as well. Because, you know, I also had a, similar to Donald Trump, I had a come to Jesus on Joe Kent as well. You know, I don't think he ran a particularly good congressional campaign the first time around. I thought the second one was much better, and I think he as a candidate was much better, but there's no denying he's incredibly intelligent. He obviously has the experience and knows a lot about these issues. He has a very measured way about speaking about our policy when it comes to war policy, fighting, foreign affairs, et cetera. I think he'll be fantastic in this position. And I also think that he has a way about him where, yes, he's loyal to Donald Trump, but I think that he's going to be willing to say what needs to be said. I mean, that's kind of what I got from our conversation. And so I really enjoyed chatting with him and getting to know him a little bit better over the last year or so. So I'm very happy for Joe. His family has given so much to this country. His loyalty to this country cannot be questioned. And so I think that's a fantastic appointment by President Donald Trump. All right, speaking of the Trumpster, man, the caving. They're just caving. They're caving left and right. So Justin Trudeau. Oh, Justin, we knew you'd cave. So we talked on the show yesterday about how Mexico caved with a threat of tariffs. They're sending 10,000 troops to the border to help us with fentanyl. Justin Trudeau has caved as well after talking a big talk. He said, I just had a productive call with President Trump. Canada is implementing our $1.3 billion border plan, strengthening the border with new helicopters, new technology, more personnel, increased coordination with our American partners, and more resources to combat fentanyl trafficking. It's just interesting, though. Well, let me read this. It says, nearly 10,000 officers are and will be on the ground protecting our border. Like, nobody's trying to sneak into Canada, right? Like, who's going to sneak into Canada from the U.S.? So really, all of that is just to keep people from coming here from there. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Nobody's sneaking into Canada. That's just not happening. Oh, maybe a few here and there.
Well, you jump, then jump back.
You can. There's spots where you can put your foot on the other side of the border.
And Blaine.
Blaine is pretty easy. I've been up there with Border Patrol on a ride-along. He goes, in addition, Canada is making, hey, look, I love Canadians. If you're watching in Canada, I'm half Canadian. My dad was Canadian. Love Canada. It's a nice, quaint little 51st state. In addition, Canada is making new commitments. We will appoint a fentanyl czar, add Mexican cartels to the list of terrorist entities, ensure that we keep an eye on the border 24/7, which are you not? Oh, God. And launch with the United States a joint strike force on organized crime, fentanyl trafficking, and money laundering. I also signed a new intelligence directive focused on organized crime and fentanyl, which will be supported by an investment of $200 million. The proposed tariffs will be put on hold for at least 30 days while we work together on this. I mean, how can you paint that as anything other than a win? Democrats and some Republicans losing their mind over the tariffs because tariffs are really a tax, essentially. And so some Republicans and conservatives aren't supportive of tariffs typically. But I don't know if Trump ever intended to really put the tariffs in place. I mean, he obviously is going through with it on China, but I think he knew that they were gonna fold like a cheap suit. Well, and how can you not celebrate that as a win? How can any Democrat spin this as anything other than a win?
I think that I don't think this is a big concern of Trump's. This is obviously not a gigantic concern. Mexico is the concern. Yeah. That's where this is all happening. Not a lot of it happens in Canada. However, but it is this. You have to strengthen the borders all the way around, or they're just going to jump over that one, go over there, come down here, come this way. And right now, I feel like all the responsibility is on us. And he's trying to say, listen, we're done being taken advantage of. We're done being the only ones taking care of this. And we just want this to be a group effort. If you're gonna profit from us or from this friendship, then let's make it both ways. So I get the strength. I don't know that it was super necessary, everything that he just agreed to do, but I think it's great.
I think it's super necessary only because we already saw that happening. So I did a ride along with Border Patrol. It would have been one of the last stories I did before I left Fox 13. So this is probably 3 years ago. And I was out with Blaine Sector. Yep. And I went out with them on the ground. We were out patrolling by car. We were out patrolling on the water, which was an interesting experience. They have a boat that goes so fast. I thought I was going to hurl my poor cameraman. But we spent the entire day out with them. And their contacts had dramatically increased. Mm-hmm. So I want to say this was during, God, would it have been under Biden or Trump? I can't remember. But either way, they were seeing this, you know, dramatic surge in numbers and in contacts from all over the world. And so when you have reduced the flow to nearly zero on the southern border, the cartel won't just give up. These people trying to enter the country from all these other places, from China, from Sudan or whatever it is, they're not just going to give up.
No.
No, they're going to find their way into Canada. And then Canada's so lax, they're just going to walk. It's much easier to get in the United States over the northern border. So that's the thing, is it's planning ahead and saying, you know, we're not giving them this escape route where they can just come in a different direction. So if you don't clamp down, like you said, on all of it at once, what's the point?
Right.
You know, and put that security in. And the fentanyl thing is a big deal. That fentanyl is coming up from Mexico through the United States and sometimes up through Canada. So the United States has an obligation too. Like, we need to stop the fentanyl here so it doesn't get to Canada either.
Vancouver?
Yeah, 100%.
Not pretty right now.
So yeah,
it's making its way through.
And it also shows Justin Trudeau, he's just trying to be.
I think it was just that statement.
Yeah. Yeah, if Border Patrol is listening in Blaine, I want to do another ride along. I'm gonna reach out to them. Well, I mean, yeah, we'll reach out to them. It's been a while. I haven't done it since like Bipley was in charge up there, but it's been several years. But now they're out. We put all those faces of the criminals that they were arresting with the help of ICE and stuff. Yeah. They're busy up there.
Hey, we could do a little busy bees. Show road trip to Blaine. I'll take you to my spot.
Oh, great. I'm excited. Blaine, here I come. Here I come. Undivided takes Blaine.
Yeah, man. It'll
be exciting. Anyway,
I think it's all good. I think it's working for him. So everybody that was freaking out yesterday saying, that's not right.
Oh, my God. The cost of avocados. The cost of coffee.
It's all strategic. There's always a plan. And now I'm not saying that, you know, maybe Temu is going to be a little more expensive. But
can I ask you about Temu? You've ordered from Temu, right?
I have.
Which is just sad, Nicole. So Temu is this like cheap. There's this, not to get too far afield here, but there's this Instagram account that just shares like Temu fails, where it's like people order something from Temu and it shows up. So for instance, this woman ordered this beautiful pink door ribbon.
I saw that. Did you see this
beautiful ribbon that goes on your door, you know, which I don't know why you'd want a ribbon on your door. And it gets there and it's a sheet with a picture of a door and ribbon.
Yeah.
So over your door, you hang the sheet with a picture of a door. It was just terrible.
Like a curtain.
But I always see these ads for Temu on X. And it's for stuff like a massive 400 square foot greenhouse for outdoors. Who's ordering a 400 square foot greenhouse from Temu?
I have no idea. You know, I really don't know.
You know you'll probably die in it. Because the second you step foot in, that thing's going to crumble. Some of the things that Temu sells, I'm like, who is ordering that? Who thinks that you're going to get a 300, 400 square foot greenhouse for $19 and it's going to stand?
Well, some of the stuff, depending on what it is, I think is coming locally now. So some of that stuff, you're actually ordering the same thing you're ordering on Amazon.
What have you ordered from Temu?
There's been some baby clothes that I've ordered, some like baby stuff for my niece. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Storage stuff, maybe. I don't know. Just random crap that's kind of fun.
We got
some elephant or white elephant gifts for Christmas, things like that. You know, like a little elf on the shelf Snoop.
Snoop Dogg? Oh, God. Okay. But we should do a segment called like Nicole's Temu Purchases. I really will just review them.
I could. I mean, I got to start now because it takes a while to get shipped. if you're getting from there.
But if you're paying a dollar, you know, it's going to take a while. Oh, my God.
There is some very misleading stuff. They have very cute ornaments around Christmas that look cute. And then you get them and it's like a piece of plastic.
Let's stop buying stuff from Temu. 2D. No more Temu stuff.
But anyway, but... like I said, I think it's getting funneled in anyway. It's like Amazon carries it all now. Yeah. Anyway, so you can usually search Temu and find it on Amazon.
Interesting stuff. So I don't know.
Anyway, it's all strategic is what I was saying.
Yes.
I think when everybody freaks out about some announcement Trump's made, I'm like, okay, we'll give it a day because we're going to figure out why he did it in about 24 hours.
Also, since we just went on a rant about something random, you know how many messages I got about my self-checkout rant on the show yesterday?
Oh.
Many people agree with me. Self-checkouts are not the bee's knees. Necessary, but I hate them.
Sometimes
I won't
like
get
it.
Into it again.
Sometimes I like it, but then on the other hand, like I said yesterday, I think on the show or off the show, I don't remember, but they've just made... the wages so high that there's I can't stand going to a register and waiting in line. I have zero patience at the grocery store, so I'd much rather go and just self-checkout.
100%. 100%. All right, good stuff. Nicole, before we get to our daily subscriber show poll and questions and our closing sanity check, are you happy with how your retirement portfolio is positioned? We only get one retirement. Do you think it's time for a second opinion? I mean, you get second opinions on all sorts of stuff, critical. I mean, hell, when I have something wrong with my car and I think that they're asking me too much to fix it, I'm going to get a second opinion on that. So why would you not get a second opinion on your retirement portfolio? Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital can do just that. They specialize in managing risk, and it's very important because you only get one retirement. You don't want to put it at needless risk. I mean, risk is always part of the equation when it comes to investments, etc. But it's always smart to get a second opinion. And Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital, can do that for you. You can go to knowyourriskradio.com and sign up for their free Know Your Risk portfolio review. So what does that entail? Well, you'll get a full review of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. You only get one retirement. Get a second opinion. Schedule your free portfolio review now at knowyourriskradio.com. knowyourriskradio.com. Okay, our daily subscriber show poll has to do with the school choice bill that is being considered in Olympia. So I asked you on Patreon Locals and X, would you support a law in Washington State that provides scholarships to families in order to pay for private school or homeschooling? Yes or no? Nicole, I think we're both on the same page on this.
I think yes. We're on the same page, yes. Yeah.
Yes. Either you improve our public school system or you kick rocks and you let me take my kid and go somewhere else. Let's see, but I mean, not unanimous. Patreon over there, 30% of people saying they don't support such a policy. Yeah. Let me see. Knuckles said, when one lives in a rural area, there is only public school or homeschool. There'll never be private schools. Kayla said, no, but I would support the right for taxpaying parents to have a choice to use the funds they pay for the school they select. So I think maybe they're taking issue with the scholarship aspect of it.
Well, I think that it means the same thing. So it's coming, it's taking the money away from the school and giving it as a scholarship to wherever you would like to go.
Yeah, just kind of doled out in a different way. Bill said, as long as they take that money from public school budgets, particularly massive building projects. Kathleen, who decides who receives the scholarships? In this state, it will be DEI recipients. That means middle-class white kids, anyone above poverty level, are out of luck and stuck in the public schools. Yeah, I do think that there were some stipulations. The bill is pretty long. I encourage you to read it. There's definitely some stipulations about who would be prioritized, but it's a Republican bill, so it's not going to be DEI. It is meant to prioritize special needs, people who rely on special education, and also families that are at a particular earning level for sure. The special education thing makes a lot of sense because one of the things we've heard, we've done interviews about this before, the way our special education students are being treated in our schools is abysmal. And the lack of access for them, the lack of really seemingly care or concern to make sure that they get what they need to be successful is horrible. So tailoring it or prioritizing special needs students who need something special to help with their education, I think makes sense. And also, you know, putting some sort of, I get it, that is that really fair if you put sort of a an earning threshold on it? Because everyone should have the opportunity to be able to homeschool and not pay out of pocket for it if somebody else doesn't. But prioritizing people who are below a certain income level, that kind of makes sense for me. I mean, if it's reasonable, like if you're just raking in millions, you can pay for your child's private school. Is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or maybe, I don't know. There's got to be a way to figure that out.
Yeah. Kevin Gaylord, to be honest, I would say yes for private school, but no on homeschooling. Not that I have a problem with homeschooling. I would just be worried some people would take their kids out of school just to collect the money and not take their kids serious. That is one concern I would have, is if you've got some trash ass parent, and they do exist. They do exist.
They do.
And they're like, well, gosh, I'm going to get a big fat check from the state to homeschool my kids. I'm going to have 7 kids. I'm going to get a check from the state. I'm not going to teach those kids a damn thing. So what's the safeguard for
right.
that?
I think that they need to be, and this is, I think, to some extent monitored, but the kids have to pass tests to make sure that they're, like, doing the curriculum.
Like, what are you learning,
What are you learning? But I do think that there should be, I know someone who started homeschooling their kids, and the requirement to homeschool your kids was, I think you had to have taken any secondary school courses or something like that, like finished up. So it could have been an AA, it could have been college, it could have been whatever, and that gives you, like, that's enough to teach kids. But I actually think that it should be more specific to teaching kids, right? You should have to take a course or maybe a quarterly update on this is how you teach kids. Because I mean, if you went to school for nursing, like, what, you don't know what you're teaching your kid. You don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, but who gets to tell them what they have to teach their kids? The public school system that's failing?
Well, I don't mean what to teach them, how to teach.
Sure.
So Like,
who's teaching them how to teach? The public school system that's failing?
Okay.
Well, you know what I mean?
I think there has to be we have standards. The testing sets standards. So how to teach what's in the curricula as far as math, reading, science, whatever, and not all the social crap, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's more specific to that.
Yeah. And it's actually like 50-50 right now on locals, which I'm kind of surprised by that. But Diana Mo says, absolutely not. I homeschool and I do not want a single penny of government money because I do not want them to have any say in how and what I teach. But again, it's your money. Yeah, that's what I would say is it's your money that you get to keep instead of having to, because even though you homeschool, Diana Mo, you still have to pay taxes that fund our public school system.
Right. And that's why I had when you were mentioning rich people not having to pay as much. Like, if their kids go to public school, you still get that money for that kid.
It's
so
true.
I think that money, it just follows the kid. And I think it's like that. And I have friends in Iowa and they send their kids to Catholic school and like they got to pick that and the money goes with them. So,
I mean, it makes sense. Why should you have to pay into something that you don't want to use for your own child?
Right.
But then at the same time, I pay into our public school system and I don't even have kids.
Right.
So there is that. It's kind of a socialized societal thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, is that fair for me? Like, I don't even have kids and I'm paying into our public school system. So it's interesting. B. Larson, what do you mean by scholarships? If parents decide to send their kids to private school or homeschool, then they should get part of their edu taxes back, but unclear what you mean.
See, maybe that scholarships thing is kind of confusing to people.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the way to like see, do you meet these qualifications and standards for it? But yeah, I understand. I think that's kind of what's confusing people.
I think
as well.
That's how they're getting this to be discussed, though, is to say, hey, like, this is targeted towards people that live in areas that might mean that they're a little less well off than other kids, and don't you want them to have the same opportunities? That's how they got the hearing. That's why they're focusing on that.
Yeah, if you kind of frame it that way. So interesting. A lot of dissent in our daily show poll today. Love it. Love dissent. Love it. Independent thinkers. Look at you. Love it. All right. What am I doing now? Oh, comments.
A couple comments.
Okay, great. We'll just roll right into comments. Michelle Lay Kalfi says, they now ask for parents to buy all the library books and send out a link through an online bookstore. Do we really want liberals buying books for the school libraries? Do we really want liberals buying books for the school libraries?
So I think if what she's...
Oh, to fill libraries? They want parents to fill the libraries?
Yeah, I've seen that. And they've also gotten rid of librarians. And like, they've closed libraries in Blaine. The libraries are closed. I knew the librarian well, and she like doesn't have that job anymore because they closed the libraries. And so, and then they were putting books in there, of like asking for donations to put books in there because they're like, oh, kids can get it online.
Yeah.
But I think that there's a really important part of not letting kids only know how to research online. Like, they should know how to open a book and look up something or read something.
I mean, there's a place for, you know, technology is and things advance and all of that. Do I need you to open Merriam-Webster to look up the definition of a word? No. But there is something different about reading and consuming information and keeping your head out of the freaking phone. Veronica, I spend $20,000 to $40,000 a year to send my kids to private school because they wouldn't be safe in my district, and I still have to pay property taxes for the schools. And that sucks. I don't think that's cool. Bill Biz, $20 super chat. It's sad to see how dangerous Washington State curriculum in school districts have become for children. I agree. Woody 2.0. Honestly, by you putting the links up, it has made it way easier for people to do just that. And he says, yes, this is Papa Woody 2.0. Joni Pethel, I don't know about y'all, but I'm not voting for anything that takes more money from my family, including school bonds, levies, etc. Get your hands out of my pockets. But that's why they know this is all so strategic. Democrats know that people feel overtaxed, and they know they're not delivering on anything worthy of the tax money that you're giving them. So that's why they want to lift the property tax levy lid, because they don't want to ask you, because they know that you are more wary of approving taxes. You're over it. So they just want to be able to do it without asking you, because again, they can raise your property taxes at any time by coming to voters. That's the part of the equation that they don't like, because they don't want your opinion. They just want to do it without asking what you think, which is not democracy. I mean, it is in the sense that you sent them there. We elected Dal Constantine. We elected a Democratic majority in Olympia. So if you don't like these things, if you don't like the fact they're eroding parental rights, they're eroding the initiative process, they're making our communities less safe, they want to tax you without, you know, asking for a vote of the people, then that's what has to change. It all is ultimately the fault of voters and the fault of the press. Because if the press was doing its job and standing in the breach, then I think more voters would understand the environment that one party rule has created and some of the bad things that these people are doing with their absolute power. So the media bears a lot of the responsibility. Not us, though. We're perfect. All right, with that, we'll get to our closing sanity check, a doozy of a soundbite from President Donald Trump. All right, so let me set this up for you. So Donald Trump today was talking to reporters in the Oval Office, and he was talking about restoring his maximum pressure campaign on Iran. So that includes efforts to drive up oil exports down to zero in order to stop them from obtaining nuclear weapons. So he's talking about all of that. So Fox's Peter Doocy, as he often does, had a pretty good question for Donald Trump. Okay, you're going to restore your maximum pressure campaign on Iran. What happens if they kill you for doing that?
Iran and their proxies who have threatened to retaliate against you and your team by killing you guys for taking out Soleimani.
Well, they haven't done that, and that would be a terrible thing for them to do. Not because of me. If they did that, they would be obliterated. That'd be the end. I've left instructions. If they do it, they get obliterated. There won't be anything left.
Not only will they get obliterated, I've left instructions. That's like a Jason Statham line.
We know how to obliterate you.
I have a certain set of skills. I've left instructions. And I know J.D. Vance would carry those instructions out.
Absolutely.
That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here, as always. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I know it seems like an uphill battle sometimes. We'll be putting out those action alerts every day. So please make sure you just click on them. And hell, you know, take whatever position you want. This is all about independent thought. Of course, my position is the correct position. So if you need some guidance, just listen to what I think about something. And if you're undecided, probably go in that direction. But no, in all seriousness, just give you a quick way to get involved. I know a lot of you are busy. You're going about your day. You've got kids. You've got work and all these things. And you're like, Brandy, I don't have time to go to Olympia and testify. So that's why I'm giving you a simple way to get involved and try to make a difference in what's happening in our state. If you have not signed up to support the show already, please do so. It's how we continue to do this fantastic show full time and spread joy to the world. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. You just click support the show for $5 and it'll take you right to the page to do just that. See you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.